Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for Stage 1 of the Tour de France 2023 from Bilbao to Bilbao. A very difficult opening stage with GC gaps, with surprising winners, with tactics already in play, and with, unfortunately, some GC abandoned. So it had a bit of everything. And we've also got some learning for us, Benji. Every single team just about has changed their jersey for the biggest race of the year, so I don't recognize anybody. And half of them have also gone for the old white for the three quarters of the top, and then a bit of color tie-dye at the bottom.
It's actually quite crazy. 11 teams, I think, in total, and then the combination of new NC jerseys also popping in. I feel like this is being done too much. The current rule is that teams can change their jersey 3 times per year now instead of one, and I feel like that's a bit much, because don't you feel like if you're a newcomer to the sport, you want to be able to recognize the people that you're looking for? Because I feel like I had trouble finding Israel all the time today.
Yeah, the Israel one, because it doesn't even... Yeah, that one's odd.
It's like the Dutch NC jersey, but hey, Astana looked worse in person than it was when I saw it on the internet, but there's so many new jerseys out there. But anyway, we recognized most of them and were able to watch the stage.
And so this stage, 183 kilometers long, we start with two kilometer, 5 to 6% climbs, where I thought a decent break would form because we have the KOM jersey on offer for the breakaway in theory. There's then some valleys, another collection of two longer climbs, 4Ks, 5%, 3.5Ks, 8%. Another valley through Guernica, which is Bilbao's hometown. And then we do a collection of 4.5 climbs. First one, the Zabaleta's easy, the Argentinian right back for Man City, 50 pace on FIFA. And then they gradually get more difficult. Côte de Morgue, 3.8Ks, 5%. Cat 4, 1K endpoint. Côte de Vivero, 4.3Ks, 7%. Cat 2,
yep,
which means 5 points at the top, and then the Côte de Piquet after another 5 to 7 kilometer valley, 2.1Ks, 9.4%. No bonus seconds on top before an non-technical, fast descent into Bilbao, where there's a 1 kilometer, 5% drag in town, which is a difficult finish. So 3,000 plus meters elevation gain in only 180Ks. It was, a difficult stage, Benji. Were you surprised, given this is a very unusual opening stage for the Tour, that only 5 teams really cared about getting in the breakaway? With not just for the stage. Okay, maybe the stage, it doesn't matter. Everyone will chase, you won't win the stage. But with KOM on offer, that's still a good carrot for at least 10 of these teams.
Yeah, it was super odd because initially we saw like one move, the first move, and that kind of got neutralized by just so many people trying to jump on that move. But the problem is, the next move then was only 5 riders and nobody else responded. So I don't know what happened between that first move and the second move for all the other teams to say, I don't want to be in the breakaway anymore, because suddenly they didn't want to be in there. And I think last minute, a rider from Antimaché tried to bridge to the existing breakaway that would eventually form. But the breakaway would be Ancorn, Calmejean, Gregaert, Guglielmi, and Ferron. So this is a manageable breakaway. But like you said, there's quite a few teams out there where I'd be like, I kind of expected this team to put a rider up there or this team to put a rider up there. And the fact that Enarkea is not necessarily, well, they have Guglielmi, but did you expect other teams to be in there?
Why wouldn't Gorka Izagirre, Basque rider, go in there for Movistar? He could be good on these punchy climbs, home territory, take KOM jersey. It's a nice intermediate goal for them on stage one, a stage they're not going to win. I know you picked Aaron Beru maybe, but it's a stage they're not going to win. So go for KOM, you know, a bit of exposure. And then other teams like, I mean, Cofidis did have an option in Lefebvre, but yeah, there's other teams. And listen, maybe teams were big brain and they thought it would come back to on Vivero and you could win it from the take KOM day one on the GC from the GC group. But I was surprised. And anyway, we saw initially, I'm not sure if you said already, Benji, a lot of teams pacing and putting a rider forward, and that was Ineos with Turner initially showing presence, Laporte for Jumbo, Alpecin was Dillier, and Lampard and De Klerk for Quickstep, mostly De Klerk. UAE were monitoring break formation and then saw four other teams were there, I think, and Trenton's like, we don't need to put Langan in front when four other teams are chasing. And they never really let the break have more than 130. I thought, and this is from like the Dauphiné, where Rune Herreholtz nearly won the stage. Teams think, even though this isn't the strongest break, it's still four riders and there's climbs and you can lose your rouleur domestiques very quickly. So
yep.
That's why they kept the breakaway very, I think, too tight. And I think de Klerk was overpacing, actually.
I think so as well. And just to get a bit of a run through of what happened before, we saw de Klerk absolutely pacing like crazy behind this five-man breakaway. We had 2K win points. The first one went to Gregaert, who was out of the saddle for like 600 meters going early, and then everybody waited a bit to respond. And then Akorn basically came too late and also exploded trying to respond. But then Akorn took the next one because he knew who to respond to on that next KOM. But like you mentioned, de Klerk is keeping this so close that, yeah, Akorn now has 3 points after these first 2 KOM points. There's the next one, the Morga KOM that comes, that is also 2 points. The max he can get is 5 KOM points. And you said it at the start, Cote Vivero, second cat, 5 KOM points. This would mean that they would equalize in points, and the tiebreaker is the person that gets the highest category climb. Right. So the person that got the points on Vivero would take up KOM. And at that point, it's lost for the breakaway. They can't take it until they survive Vivero, which is unlikely even without de Klerk pacing, because everybody's going to be sprinting towards Vivero. But like you said, de Klerk pacing so much, it was unnecessary. Like, he almost caught the breakaway at 65 kilometers to go. He then caught the breakaway at 50 kilometers to go. And it felt like he was toning down a little bit on the climbs while moving harder in the valleys. But Jumbo went up to him. Benoit went up to him and said, Timmy, come on, calm down. My boy, we don't need to do this. This is not necessary. I know you haven't been able to do this for a while now. Yeah, but
harsh on him.
What?
Oh, de Klerk. I mean, I think you're right. He wanted to show that he's back and he's old track.
And he's fucking strong.
Yeah, he was. But I agree. Like, why would you bring the break back at 65Ks to go when you have basically, you're just going to induce maybe other attacks from other riders? Now, that didn't happen. And you got to know as well, the GC guys are going to be so nervous. They're going to pace so hard with all their, you know, with Bjerg, with Trentin, with Van Hooydonk. The break is going to get managed. So I was surprised they didn't let it out to over 1 minute. Because I thought maybe on Vivero someone would go. Now, Gregaert took the first KOM points, very impressive. Akorn was leading. So when the break got caught, Akorn was leading on 3 points. But
doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, too bad for him. So we then see, we've done a few climbs. The main one is Vivero. Sprinters drop on Morga. Cavendish gone, other riders gone. We go then to the Vivero climb where we started the stream. And positioning very not that important. It's a wide road, to be honest. Yep. The peloton is pretty big. We have UAE on one side. We have Jumbo Visma on the other side. I was quite impressed with Lotto Destiny, actually, keeping Van Hills forward for as long as their team could do so. And DSM were forward as well, with, I think, Hamilton trying to keep Bardet in good position. And the other teams escaped me. Ineos would come forward for a bit, but not consistently up there.
I feel like this happened a lot with Pogacar's team UAE as well, because on this climb we saw before the climb even them moving up and then losing ground a bit once we get to a certain point, and then they come up again. So it's kind of like Sergi. While I saw Jumbo more as the presence that stayed at the front, while Jumbo was a Sergi one that moved to the front and back and moved to the front and back. But when it mattered, they were there at the foot of Vivero. They were at the front. So regardless of that Sergi behavior, they ended up being there. Is it more dangerous for crashing though? That you have to move up every single time?
I think so. I think maintaining front position, but it's impossible for a lot of teams. Like, you can, the DS will say, go to the front and stay there. It's like, well, you're asking X amount of riders to ride like Lagac. He has to, what, ride 25 kilometers with climbs in the legs at 60 kilometers an hour on the front. It's, well, Jumbo Visma are swapping off Van Baarle and Van Hooydonk after Laporte. So it's not possible. So we have that lead out. Vivero, we see the Perigord. Mikkel Bjerg comes back with the mouth open. It's a 4 kilometer, 7% climb. It's actually a very good climb for him. It's similar to the climb where he destroyed everybody on Orquet d'Anzizon in the Tour last year. And I thought he was going to shred this into a group of 30. And when he was going, and he starts really hard.
Yeah.
This is like he also does the same thing on Hafit or Jebel Jais. He starts 30 seconds, super hard. And first of all, this is a tell. that Poggi and Yates are going to try on the next climb.
Yep.
We know that for sure. But I was surprised to see him pull off at 2Ks to go. He kind of, because at that point I didn't see Soler, and I thought, well, Groschartner and Mike are you going to use for the next climb? Mm-hmm. Who's going to do the valley? Soler did come back, so it was fine. But do you think that kind of put Van Aert, Vingegaard, Van Baarle were all in good position. So what I noticed at the back, which was Binny was in trouble.
Yep. Binny was in trouble. We saw Bilbao at the back for a second as well. I don't know where he finished at the end of the stage because I didn't see him all stage. So I can't tell you. It looked like he had a bad day, but
33 seconds.
Oh, that's pretty close, actually.
He might have had a mechanical and had to come back.
Potentially. But Binny, I didn't expect that. And I'm slightly worried for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because on paper, he was a runner that could get over Heiskebel. But if he has trouble on Vivero, then I'm starting to get worried. And about UAE there for a second, Bjerg doing half that climb and then it going back to Van Baarle pacing. I kind of saw similarities with Milano Sanremo, where UAE is trying to make the race hard so that the punchers don't really have a chance on the final climb. And now they kind of do it half with Bjerg doing half that climb, which probably still has an effect, but I kind of thought Groschartner would take up that next spot. And considering what happens on the next climb, I'm kind of like confused of what the actual plan was there. But we'll get to that in a second. We get to the top of Vivero. We've got basically Jumbo pacing. Yeah. It's a bit of a flat section on top and then it goes downhill. And in that descent, we see a crash. We don't see the crash itself, but we see three people on the floor, James Shaw, Richard Carapaz and Enric Mas, and took a second to recognize him.
Guys.
Yeah. And Mas is out.
Mas had to abandon. He looked like his right, either elbow, collarbone or wrist or whatever, something on his right arm area. He had a bad problem, couldn't get back on the bike. The camera lingered on him for a long time. Carapaz, I thought, would abandon because he initially got up. They got him a bike to ride and then camera changed. 2 minutes later, it comes back to him and he's lying on the ground now. And he had a problem with his left knee. He gets back on the bike after a long, long time and is only clipping in with his right foot and is not pedaling with his left leg. Eventually, we did see him pedaling with his left leg. But so that's two big GC guys who are top 10 GC favorites. Two GC, done. Mass out. Carapaz might abandon tonight, but he already lost 15 minutes.
And it changes those teams quite a bit, eh? Because if Carapaz had a sliver of hope for GC, which based on Dauphiné, looked a bit sketchy.
He would have tried for GC as long as possible.
He would have fallen back onto stage wins afterwards. If he comes back from his injury, he would probably go for stage wins. But I feel like it looked really sketchy to put him back on the bike at that moment, in my personal opinion. Now, he finished on 15 minutes, spoilers. So it's not like he pedaled at a really slow pace. So he kind of got back into it, but I wouldn't be shocked if something gets noticed and he still steps out. But let's hope he's okay. We want that. Mas is out and that changes a lot of things. And Jurgensen has been pacing before that moment for Movistar. So I was kind of confused of what was going to happen now.
I was really surprised to see that because, on Vivero, the 4K 7% climb, draft is important. They're going 25 plus kilometers an hour. Jurgensen was in front of Mühlberger pacing for Movistar. And I thought, is he going to just deliberately lose 10 minutes, do some work for Mas early and then lose 10 minutes and go on the breakaway on stage 5 or tomorrow or probably stage 5. But Jorgensen now ends up losing 2 minutes 30, too close to be letting the break, maybe. Mm-hmm. He might still be letting the break on stage 5, but he was their other top 10 GC candidate. I don't think he'd be going. He's definitely not going for top 10 GC if they're using him to pace on the second last climb. So they're going to have to change a few things. They brought a complete climbing squad, no sprinter except for Aaron Baru, but he's not going to win the. So they're in. It's tough for Movistar. Anyway, lead out to Côte de Piquet, we see two trains dominating. Hindley was in good position a lot, actually, with Buchmann, Jungels, and Bora Hansgrohe. They kept Hindley in good position, but the two dominant trains were Soler for UAE and Jumbo Visma with Van Hooydonk and Van Baarle on the left side of the road. There was a bit of jockeying. Soler came up and tried to close Jumbo to the left, then opened it back up, some words being said. And the entrance to Côte de Piquet isn't that technical, but we see another thing, Benji, is Van Aert's nowhere. So Van der Poel had one teammate, and he moved into okay position just in time for Côte de Piquet. And Van Aert's nowhere, and we see the train of Jumbo basically start pacing full with Van Hooydonk, Van Baarle, and Benoot, and it's like, and Kelderman too wasn't there.
Yeah, but I feel like even when it comes to Jonas's positioning wasn't perfect.
He had to do it himself.
he had to move up himself to the wheel of the train, and then the train continued onwards while he was moving up. So he's also spending energy there. Wout was in 25th position, so that's in the Shadow Realm at that point. Yes, there's an option to come back, but you're spending so much energy moving up in the same way that, for example, the year that Vanderpool was in a bad position on the Poggio, for example, you spend so much energy that you can't make your move afterwards, or you lose the ability of trying to follow the group that you want to follow. So maybe if Wout van Aert doesn't have that position, he's able to hold on better on the climb itself, but we'll never know if that's going to be the case. But Jumbo having that pace, it's odd because suddenly Groschartner came out of nowhere.
Launched it.
He absolutely launched it, and it was like, it kind of looked like the Bjerg move initially, but Jumbo doesn't care about Groschartner going up the road. So do you reckon it was Groschartner pacing? Because I feel like the way he responded when he had a gap looked like he was just trying to pace.
No, he wasn't attacking. No way he was attacking. He was trying to accelerate on the 7% section. So the climb goes 7%, 500 meters, 4%, 500 meters. Then they go over a bridge and it goes steep where the big riding on the road starts. 13% and 15% for the next two 500 meter sections. So on the 7% section, and this is where Jumbo already, it's like, who are they riding for? Because if you're doing a super hard lead out to make this whole climb as hard as possible on for the steep section, you go for Jonas and maybe he goes, you know, you put him on your Groschartner's wheel, happy days. But if they're waiting for Van Aert to make up positions, so I think they still do the right thing. In that Benoit basically lets Groschartner's wheel go. And the tell is that Groschartner gets to the 4% section, looks back. Oh shit, no one's in my wheel. And so he basically stops. Stops riding. I think he stops riding full to me.
Yeah.
Otherwise he would have put his head down. And we sort of see Yates attacking, kind of like how Vingegaard went to Valter's wheel on Cruddle Affair.
Yep.
Yates comes out of nowhere and does a lead out back to Groschartner's wheel. Poggi's in his wheel. We have then Jonas slotting onto Pogacar's wheel, and Lefebvre, Gaudu, Van Aert has moved up, Kelderman and Kusa maybe 7th, 8th wheel. We have Pidcock we can't really see. Schelmoser is also around there, 7th, 8th wheel. Alaphilippe is also 6th, 5th wheel, sort of around just behind Gaudu. And Yates they hit the steep section, Yates launches it, and immediately people are dropping. Alaphilippe drops the wheel, Gaudu drops the wheel, gaps open up, Van Aert's put on a gap. I think he would have been dropped anyway at that point. And we have four going clear, and it's, Yates, Poggi, Vingegaard, and the turn up for the books, finally stepping up to the big time and waiting for it for a while, doing it in a big race, not just a French Conti circuit, Victor Lefebvre.
This is not just a step up, eh? This is with
the three best
GC riders in this race at the moment. Well, we're still one stage in, so we're not that far in. But he's in that group of four, and that's shocking to me. And then the dynamic kind of starts because, Adam Yates, he's in there. He keeps on pacing for a bit. But there's a moment where Adam Yates goes off the front of that four-man group, and we see Pogacar doing some kind of acceleration. It wasn't a brutal acceleration. It was just like leveling up the tempo a bit. Not sure if he could do a brutal acceleration at that point, but Jonas was in the wheel. Lafayette was still in the wheel. Adam Yates on like a few meters. I would guess that he just did an effort. So he's trying to kind of like manage holding on relatively. And he's able to crawl back to that. But then Lafayette is also trying to do the same, trying to probably gain a bigger gap on the people that are behind, because otherwise he can't get anything out of the stage if that group comes back. And this does stay like this scenario for quite a bit until we get to the top. And at that point, people are coming back from behind because Wout van Aert is getting passed by Schelmoser, is the first one to bridge over. Then Simon Yates starts bridging over. I swear there's one or two riders that still bridge over to the front as well. But then we get no view for a bit.
Oh, Van der Poel and Alaphilippe they're in group three, which is very far.
Shadow Realm.
Yeah, yeah.
40 seconds.
So we were right about Van der Poel.
Tim de Klerk pacing the entire stage for Alaphilippe that dropped so early on this climb.
Yeah.
I'd have a second to think about that.
Do they have a rider on the Quickstep roster that'd be good on this stage?
Remco Evenepoel, maybe?
Has he been good in the Basque Country before?
Well, I'll get to you about Jumbo in the same sort of shape when we get to the top here, because it turns back to the front of the race, and suddenly we've got a move. We've got Adam Yates over the top, over the crest, seemingly have attacked together with Simon Yates. We don't know who initiated it. Adam Yates was at the front, so I would guess Adam Yates would do it. It's logical, because if he comes back to the group and Pogacar is the one being visualized by Jonas, he might as well try and do the 1-2 move
and
right
the group's
now.
Too big. So if it's a group of six with Jonas, Lefebvre, and a couple of GC guys, you make Adam pace.
Yeah.
But it's gone to a group of 10 with Kelderman, with Kuz, with Van Aert. And so
well,
Van Aert was back.
Yet?
They were back. They were pretty much back, yeah.
Then why are they not responding over to Craig?
They were at the back of the group.
Yeah. What happens if Roglic is in that group?
Probably crashes. Nah, I mean, it's a good, but it's a good point. Yeah, but Roglic would go with one of the with the Yates brothers, and then Adam won't work. Maybe he will, I don't
know. Yeah, but then the move is neutralized.
Yeah. So that's the thing. People were maybe dubious of Yates' two-leader strategy with Poggi, but we saw this is it in action today, and it worked out perfectly because those two go clear. They don't even need to speak to each other. Those two are pulling full, and you think, oh, the group is so big behind, but the Yates brothers, first of all, are quite aerodynamic.
Mm-hmm.
We saw on Paris-Nice Stage 8 last year, Simon Yates, Van Aert couldn't bring him back on the long descent into Nice. And you've got the two of them, and they're working well together, both to gain time, maybe the stage. Poggi's not going to help. And so you have Kelderman and Kuz chasing. Well, are Kelderman and Kuz faster than the Yates brothers? Especially when they have the moto. The Yates brothers have the moto on the descent, and the GC group doesn't have the moto? Not really. And so no other rider has another teammate in that group, except for Thibaut Pinot and Godu, so obviously they won't chase.
In the Dauphiné, we saw at this moment that Jonas Vingegaard would go to the front and start pacing for a while. But in the Tour, you don't do that. I think sports even started speculating that Vingegaard should do it to like do a favor for Jonas because Van Aert because of all the work he's going to do for Jonas. But I feel like that's a very shit take.
I mean, Wout should probably pull for Jonas GC.
If he does that, Pogacar might take more bonus seconds.
Yeah, but I'm obviously more scared of Yates than everybody in the world. So I don't want to give Yates a second, Adam Yates. Anyway, the two Yates go clear. The gap expands. It was 5 seconds at the start of the fast part of the descent. It goes to 12 and to 15, in fact. Kelderman and Kuz make no inroads. And then on the uphill drag, we see them swapping turns. Simon Yates pulls hard. Yates pulls through again. And we think, is Adam going to ride for GC gap? And Simon can sprint for the stage because Simon's sprint is very good. And Adam just drops him. Adam drops Simon Yates off the wheel. I don't know if he just wanted to give him the stage because Simon's won Grand Tour stages before.
Yeah.
I think Adam was stronger.
Yes, indeed. We haven't seen Simon Yates in the last few weeks, so it's hard to really realize what level he's at. But he looks to be pretty good strong. So I'm happy with the shape he showed. I'm curious whether that's going to evolve into GC, whether we'll see some weakness throughout the weeks in terms of recovery. Then he might go for stages, but on today's stage, it was good. And Adam Yates wins the stage. That was not on my bingo card. Adam versus Simon Yates, sprinting for the victory.
Adam Yates. Not the two. I didn't think they'd go clear. two brothers going clear. Adam Yates winning the stage, going into yellow. Not the UAE rider maybe people expected, including myself, to win the stage ahead of his brother Simon by 4 seconds. Ahead of the main GC group by 12 seconds, led by Pogacar, who wins the sprint. Van Aert was boxed in a little bit, but to me, he didn't have much snap either. So I think Poggi's winning that sprint anyway.
Yeah.
Pinot in fourth, so he's in good shape. Woods fifth, Lefay sixth. Lefay probably deserved more from the stage. Hindley seventh, Schelmos eighth, Vingegaard ninth, Godu 10th, Van Aert 11th on the stage. Rodriguez, Lander, Kelderman made it. Kuz dropped a little bit of time. The next group, Corbin Strong led that in. So
strong ride.
Yeah, strong ride. The Pidcock was put on 33 seconds, so not for him, but the GC guys losing time were...
Martinez.
Danny Martinez lost 3 minutes, so he's done. Bardet lost 33 seconds. I'm sorry, Luke, 20 seconds to the main GC group. Menkes lost 20 seconds. Bernal lost 20 seconds. Haig, O'Connor, Ciccone, Goll all lost 20 seconds to the main GC group.
When it comes to Carapaz losing 15 minutes, but Uran also loses 5 minutes and a half. So
really,
their entire GC is gone in this one
stage.
Where's
Chavito? And Chavez lost 5 minutes.
So
EF GC is finished.
But it's also freeing them because that team is really strong for breakaways regardless. Yeah. I love seeing Uran go for stages the way he did.
Well to last year.
Yeah, beautiful to see. And there's plenty of other riders in their team that can do so as well. So if we take a look at how the stage is won, how the stage was delivered here, we've got Yoey Kemp, Adam Yates taking 22 seconds in GC, if I recall correctly.
22 on Jonas.
And Pogacar takes 4 seconds because of the bonus seconds in the sprint. I would say that's a 1-0 on paper for UAE because they're actually taking time on Jonas.
For sure.
But I would also say that Jonas did what I expected to do on this stage. I didn't expect more than this for Jonas. This is what I would expect. Him losing time 4 seconds to Pogacar is what I expected. I didn't necessarily expect Adam Yates taking 22 seconds next to that. But when it comes to UAE, despite them being 1-0 ahead, yes, Adam Yates looks fucking strong. Let's be honest about it. You were right about that, but let's see about his recovery over 3 weeks.
Stage one, yeah.
I'm going to remain very skeptical for now, but I'm happy to see it because there is a fight on our hands at the moment. But Pogacar, I'm super happy that he was at the level he was because this does show that he doesn't get dropped on this climb, which was a thing many people were speculating, and I was hoping wouldn't happen because...
He will never get dropped on this climb in December, November, January, never, ever.
In this stage, he must 100% beat Vingegaard on the road and not drop and win the sprint against him. 100%. Every single time of the week. But on the climb itself, it's not like he had something left to really accelerate greatly and drop Lafay and so forth. So
he didn't have much snap, did he? I would say he did. I don't think he accelerated off Yates' pace.
Agreed. And it's hard to say whether that was a moment where Jonas couldn't do that either. We don't
know. But that's the question, right? If Wavanaugh doesn't exist, how does Jonas ride this stage? Does he attack over the top of Lafay if he can?
I think...
And with Wout behind, you can't.
I'm going to go even more out of the box. If Wout is not in this race, Roglic is. And then he's in the wheel of Adam Yates when he attacks.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, Wout van Aert was very valuable in the Tour last year, but often, you know, it's swings and roundabouts. Sometimes there's moments where Vingegaard is riding in a slightly different way, and it's also strategically helpful. Yep. Like, the flip of that is Lefebvre and Pogacar have to work, and he sits in the wheel and gets a free ride to the finish because he's got Van Aert, the car to Van Aert behind. So it's not... I'm not saying it's wrong that he doesn't attack. It's also how much time can he gain either.
Is this a better scenario? It depends on how scared you are of Adam Yates, of course, but...
Yeah, would you rather lose 10 to Poggi or 4 to Poggi?
Exactly. In that sense, this is an okay scenario for Jonas that he doesn't lose 10 seconds. If it was a group of 5 sprinting, there's a chance that he's 4th and that he loses 10 seconds to Poggi, bonus seconds, wins the stage, takes yellow, and so forth. But with Adam Yates ahead, it's like, yes, you didn't lose 10 seconds to Poggi, but Adam Yates ran off with 22 seconds and... You can be a little bit scared of Yates.
No, I think you have to be properly... Like, he already took 22 seconds on this stage. And listen, the Tour isn't won on stage one, and this isn't the stage Vingegaard would have been trying to win the Tour either.
Yeah.
You can't win the Tour on this stage, but you can lose it like Mas and Carapaz. It's gone. It's all over already, the podium or whatever result. So, but why can't UAE do this after the top of Marie Blanc again? We have a downhill run to Laurent.
Yep.
They could have 2 in a group of 5 with only Jonas isolated. Why can't he attack again?
It's difficult. It's more difficult than Marie Blanc. On this climb, the bonus seconds were not given on Piquet. They took that away, the bonus seconds on top of Piquet. On Marie Blanc, there is bonus seconds on top, which means that Pogacar and Vingegaard will be sprinting for that. Adam Yates would have to follow their wheel and then attack from their wheel after that sprint. But then you already need to be in their wheel and have spent energy being in their wheel. I think it's harder to do it on the crest of Marie Blanc.
Yeah, but then, you know, we saw Marie Blanc in 2020, Roglic and Pogacar stopped pretty much and then worked with the group afterwards. And just to go to the interview of Yates, it was kind of curious. He contradicted himself somewhat. And so Gianetti came out 2 days after our preview saying, Yates is co-leader because he was in good shape in the Dauphiné. And honestly, Poggi's wrist hasn't completely healed, so we have no other choice. And then Yates gave all these interviews before the stage, Poggi's the big boss.
Yeah.
And then on the climb, that did seem to be the case, because if he was true co-leader, then Poggi lets his wheel go, because it was so narrow. It was so narrow where the fans were on PK. You let his wheel go, Jonas can't move up, and he goes clear. So then it looked like they were 100%. Yates is right, Poggi's the big boss. But then he... attacks, gets this time, wins the stage, yellow, and then in the interview afterwards, he says, Pogacar's still the boss. And then he says, send this afterwards, and no one was believing this week in the two-leader strategy.
Mate.
And I was like, you just said the sentence before that it's a myth.
Mate, you've been shouting about it for 7 months to me.
And then I was like, well, no. And so the reality is, I'll say it again, they are going to keep Yates in GC for as long as possible to put Jumbo-Visma under pressure for as long as possible, because it makes no sense to burn his GC and look at the result today.
Exactly.
Now, whether that lasts into Courchevel, that's a completely separate question. I'm obviously quite confident in it, but it's a great strategic card to play.
Yeah.
Did someone like McNulty?
Yeah, but
maybe McNulty actually could have done something like this. I don't know.
I am not necessarily. I don't know. Today we saw the 1-2 action. We saw the Pogacar being in the group, Vingegaard not responding to Adam Yates, who goes up the road, Simon joining him, and so forth. I feel like it's harder to do that on a proper climb. I feel like it being over the crests is a perfect spot to do it.
Yeah.
If it's on a climb itself, Jonas can probably just follow because Adam Yates' attacks are not like accelerated.
Yeah, but he's still having to do something. Yeah. And now he's no longer in Pogacar's wheel. Pogacar's in his wheel. Yeah. It still makes a difference. But anyway, yeah, Yates into yellow jersey, points jersey. His brother Simon Yates goes into it, or not into it. He's not leading the competition, but he'll wear it tomorrow. Paulus is leading the KOM classification on 5 points. EF 2 years in a row now. Credit to them. You know, they made the call on the road, realizing Vivero, it was up for grabs. Paulus was very strong actually, because he did a whole lead out and then dusted Zimmerman in the sprint, and he also got the call Zimmerman to sprint for it. Youth, Pogacar already goes into the white jersey for the rest of the race. Teams don't know. So I agree, Benji, like Jumbo won't be devastated tonight, but also, you know, but you'd rather be UAE winning the stage and going into yellow if you could. Hindley, I thought him and Bora looked very on, very professional.
Yeah.
Gudu was good, but this is actually a very, very good climb for him and Schelmose, and it's the longer climbs where I'm a bit skeptical. Rodriguez, the best of the Ineos riders, he looked incredibly skinny.
Van Barle too,
but Rodriguez, Rodriguez is the Ineos main GC guy. If Bernal... Well,
after today, seemingly.
But yeah.
It can still swap around.
It's still a punchy finish. Like maybe Bernal's long climbing is better, you know?
Bernal and Rodriguez, they should both keep up there. Martinez is out of the picture.
Yeah, Martinez
is the
Pidcock.
So domestique / breakaways for Martinez, that's how I look. Pidcock, I see the same, to be honest. Yes, he's on 33 seconds today, but if he does that on this terrain, I'm worried what he does up on the longer climbs when it comes to dropping.
Yeah, so yeah, I think most teams would just be happy that they're not Movistar or EF.
Yeah.
You know, most teams will be happy they haven't lost their GC leader on stage one. That's kind of the nervous, hectic thing at this stage. Anything else from this, Benji?
We skipped the intermediate sprint. We saw Pedersen getting a massive launch by Simmons. Really good
lead out. Sagan was good. Second.
Exactly. I didn't necessarily expect it. I was kind of disappointed in Philipsen not being able to overtake Sagan there. I don't know what to read into that. I hope we see Philipsen absolutely destroy some sprints this season. Because
Bernard didn't contest it. Binnie got a lead out and then didn't really have anything, or just was in bad position.
It's logical to me that Van Aert doesn't contest it on this stage necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that final is way more important, and there's more opportunities where he needs to be supportive of Vingegaard being in breakaways and so forth, where he can pick up 20 points regardless, something like that. So
let's talk about
much.
Tomorrow. Speaking of Van Aert, Vittoria Gasteiz to San Sebastian. It is, I think, an easier stage than today, even though it still has a lot of climbing. It's a long stage, one of the longest in this Tour de France, 210 kilometers. Now, the intermediate sprint tomorrow is before, I believe, a little climb. I don't know what break will go, but anyway, we have...
Is that sponsored by Lidl as well?
Yeah. Well, they're on all the kit. They got the new kit. Their bikes look good, though. Their Simmons paint job looks sick for the American champs. Lots of 4.5K, 5-6% climbs tomorrow. Like there is a half dozen, 8 climbs tomorrow now. But the main one is the Hayiscabel. It has bonus seconds on top. It's 8.1 kilometers, 5.2%. Bit of a fake news climb. Not outrageous, not by Basque standards. Because it's first 3K is a 5%. Then there's a kilometer of false flat downhill. Then a 3 kilometer 7% section, then a 6% last kilometer. So judging from today, I don't think Jumbo, before the race, I thought Jumbo would have to put Benoit on this climb and really push to drop a Binnie. They'd have to really drive it. After Binnie today and Philipsen and Pedersen, I don't know when Pedersen dropped. I didn't really get shown. I think this is going to be quite a reduced group, and I think Poggi takes more bonus seconds tomorrow.
210 kilometers to control. UAE won't do it.
True, yeah.
Who's going to do it? Because, like, Alaphilippe didn't look great today. The finish is also not perfection for him either, so I don't see Quickstep necessarily doing it. If I think about our teams, obviously, Jumbo is one that
moves control.
Up. You think UAE will control tomorrow?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think they should at all.
You don't? Yeah, but when UAE... They never let the break out. They never let the breakout. They're not going to let someone take Yates yellow jersey. They never do that. Remember last year? They're not going to do it.
Yeah, because last year there were stages where Pogacar could take seconds.
Yeah, and he can take seconds tomorrow.
True.
And there's the bonus on the Hayuska bell.
Yeah.
You want to take Alsprint and Jonas. They will control the break. And they last year, they could have given the jersey away on Egler, on Mejev, and they paced full. I think they're going to control all day tomorrow.
I don't know. It's a long stage, and I don't feel like their team has it to control that entire stage.
How do UAE think?
Who else? Who else can do the same? Because
Alpecin for Van der Poel?
Movistar for Aramburu?
Yeah, he should go on the break. No, yeah. He should go on the breakaway.
He should be in the break. And like, if you're Van der Poel, yes, the stage is perfect, but can't you also just do it from the break? That's more difficult. Because then you get a scenario like the Mohoric one where Van der Poel and Van Aert were in the break and makes it much more difficult for...
But that's the thing. I thought today there'd be a much bigger fight for the breakaway.
Yeah.
And if I'm a DS tomorrow, now it's kind of flat the first 10Ks and there's one pickup out of Alegria tomorrow. But
yeah.
It's not a serious climb. So break formation for a Gorka Izaguirre is difficult. But if you're a Matteo Jorgensen who can get on the... Like if you're Jack Haig, you didn't lose enough time.
Yeah.
Jorgensen only lost 2:38. UAE are not going to give you both the stage and yellow. They're not going to do it. So the riders who I would see, Moric, I don't know how much time he lost today. If I look at Bahrain, he wouldn't have. He only lost. No, he lost 3:37. But it's not 10 minutes.
Do they control for Fred Wright though?
Exactly, Fred Wright, or even Moric is not bad in a group. I think it's GC again because people will be too aggressive, and I don't think enough will go on the break.
GC is a big word. I think it's going to be the peloton sprinting for it. Not necessarily.
Yeah. No.
Yes,
gaps.
Pogacar can take 4 seconds in the sprint. I think winning is more difficult.
And
on this
eight
terrain.
On Hayeskabel. 8 seconds is not nothing.
I think that's valuable.
He can go 8 + 4 + 4, quick maths. He can go 16 seconds ahead of Jonas by stage two.
I don't think he'll take 8 seconds on Vingegaard on that climb, though.
Because Jonas will
probably get second or third. There's a random person getting...
Why wouldn't Gaudu sprint?
Paulus for KOM points.
Why wouldn't Paulus sprint for KOM?
We forgot to mention that, by the way.
No, we mentioned it.
Oh, okay. Weird. Never mind. Love Zimmermann and Paulus doing that.
So it's a tricky stage, and Jumbo-Visma will be thinking, well, it's also a stage win on offer for Van Aert. Now, he won in Lausanne last year on a similar-ish finish. I don't think he should have any trouble making it over that climb. Should UAE pace the Hayeskabel very, very hard? Probably, to make sure that Poggi can sprint for the bonies and it's a small group for the finish. Who are you going for the... I think Binnie gets dropped, Benji. I didn't like Binnie today.
Yeah.
And Phillips and Pedersen, I don't see it either. Who you got?
I don't see it either. We have for this finish, yes. Pidcock should still be in the group, but I'm a bit worried there. Wout van Aert is one of the favorites for this race.
Do you think his legs will be less gassed after a climb like this than the Côte de Piquet?
It should be. 100%
should be. It's further from the finish.
It's Wout van Aert versus a Pogacar versus Aramburu. I'm not joking about this, by the way. He got 16th today, so actually not terrible.
No, he'll get over it, no problem.
Alaphilippe will probably be sprinting as well. So we're looking at those riders. Van Hills. I'm going to go with Maxim Van Hills.
That's a good shout.
Fuck it.
Well, in Catalonia, in very similar stages, he came
top five,
third.
Though,
and
so.
Yeah, behind.
Winning is difficult. Podium possible.
I'm going to go with, I'm just going to see where he finished before I say it. No.
Bilbao?
No, I was going to go with Coquard. But I don't know where he is.
What's up with Bilbao? Because like, when it comes to Bilbao on these kind of finishes, we saw him Basque Country, was it 2 years ago, where he was winning in like 10-man group sprints?
He's better for this finish than today.
Why are
Bilbao's,
we not?
He's good on a flat finish.
Van der Poel's going to win the stage, isn't he?
True. Why are we not talking about Van der Poel? Okay.
I'm switching to Van der Poel. It's over. Bye.
Yeah, it's better for him. It's better for him because he wasn't... He will make it.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I'm going to... I agree with the Van der Poel pick. I think Van Aert will come second and Poggi third. Or maybe even Poggi second, honestly. And Van Aert third. Or Alaphilippe, I think, should be good for this too.
And it's like, with the other sprinters you're looking at, Mezgets has climbed good in the past, but on this level, on the World Tour step, I find it hard to believe that he's going to be there.
When they put Groschartner and Soler on Hayeskabel on 7% for 10 minutes, it's all over.
Even Pedersen's gone. All those riders are going to be gone. Fred Wright, 11 minutes today, but maybe he can follow the group and hold on and do it. It's not impossible.
Is Magnus Cort here?
Magnus Cort is here.
I mean, a peak Magnus Cort should, and Betiol would even be around there, but Cort lost 15 minutes today, but no need for him to, go any faster.
Maybe he's in the break tomorrow.
You know what sort of stage this is, Benji, and he's not here.
Michael Matthews.
It's Michael Matthews sort of stage. It actually is, dude. He would have won it. It's not uphill finish. If it was a 4% uphill, he would have won it. Anyway, we both like Van der Poel for tomorrow. He, even if he wins the stage, he will not take the yellow jersey. So Adam Yates, if the GC group wins, will keep yellow probably for, for until at least stage five, unless UAE give it away tomorrow, which I really don't see. So hope you enjoyed the podcast. We'll be back. Are we doing a stream tomorrow?
I'm done.
Okay, we'll do a stream tomorrow. Make sure you check out the LRCP Twitter account. That notifies you when the stream is on. Thanks to you all for listening and your support in particular on the preview. That's unbelievable. And the donations, we really appreciate the support. And so the Vuelta's on. We'll be in person together at the Vuelta.
The Vuelta's on?
Yeah.
Oh.
You'll be coming here for the Vuelta.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll just write it down.
FYI, you'll be coming there. We'll be going to Barcelona even for the first two stages.
I'm done.
Then back to here for the Andorran third stage. So thanks all for your support through the donating to the Ko-Fi link down below. And we'll see you with stage two recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.